sometimes I found myself like, hey, yeah, it's a bit too confusing and annoying. But after like, I don't know, let's say 5 days, 6 days, I was getting used to the new system, and I, yeah, then everything just follow. And then went smoother and smoother. At the end of the day, it's really good.
Welcome to the JS World Podcast, powered by passionate people. Here we interview our speakers from the JS World Conference. We talk life, tech, and all sorts of things. Like what we have to offer? Like and subscribe. And don't forget to follow us on at JS World Conf on Twitter.
So welcome back to a new episode of the JS World Podcast. I'm Renee, one of the consultants at Passionate People, and I'm joined here by Medhat, one of my colleagues.
Yeah, hi everyone, my name is Medhat. I'm also a consultant for Passionate People, and we are here interviewing Anne. Would you please introduce yourself to the people who don't know you?
Right, so everyone, name is Anne, and I'm a core member of VGS. I'm here in Amsterdam speaking about migrating one of my apps from V2 to V3. Just finished the talk.
Yeah, you just came off the stage. It was a bit of chaos at the start. So
yeah,
it was live demo effects.
It was a bit painful to be.
Yeah. Bit of a painful start, but yeah. Everything in the end.
Yeah.
So I saw a part of it. I saw about the. Is it called Cool? Like the application?
That's the thing. It's Coel, I think.
Coel.
Yeah, that's the name of the bird. Yeah. Right. So the bird is just. Thing like that, cool, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. This is bird that was a longer.
Yeah. It's the bird that just sings that way. And the thing is, like, other people in Europe, because you say O and E together, you're like ooh, yeah, and ooh. And I was like, maybe that's a name, but no, it's not. It's not. I checked.
It's Coel.
Yeah, it's Coel. I checked with Google and Wikipedia. No, it's Coel. I'm going back. Yeah.
You know that in Dutch as well, there's a couple of characters that are long I and
short I and things like that. So
two characters are one character.
Yeah, I live in Germany, and O E is actually for the umlaut. The O with umlaut, which is
O. It's a different character.
It's a different character.
Wow, yeah, that's really good. So your talk is about migrating from Vue 2 to Vue 3. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Can you give us like a brief to the people who are watching as well? How smooth is it to migrate from Vue 2 to Vue 3, based on your, of course, experience?
On a scale from 0 to 10, 0 being like impossible, and 10 like okay, just upgrade some packages.
Yep.
I would give it somewhere around 7.
Seven is always average. The average of
the thing is like hardness. I talked to some developers right before my talk during lunch, and they asked the same question, like, what's my experience? And my answer was basically like this: when you start migrating anything, at first you would feel very confused by all the breaking changes. Mm-hmm. You want to yell at the freaking change, right? Okay, who came up with this?
Yeah.
And same goes with Vue 2 to Vue 3. Even though, I'm not stranger to Vue, still there are changes that, because it's a vast ecosystem now, it's impossible to keep track of everything. So I found myself like, hey, it's a bit too confusing and annoying. But after like, I don't know, let's say 5 days, 6 days, I was getting used to the new system, and I, then everything just follow. And then when smoother and smoother at the end of the day, it's really good. Yeah. So that's why I put an average there. I say I put a 7.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great. But since you are contributing already to the ecosystem and you're contributing to Vue, you were expecting most of these breaking changes, right?
In a way, yes. That in Vue, actually, we have different teams. Right? We have core teams to handle the compiler, the core stuff, Evan, and we have teams that handles let's say the plugin for visual code and so on and so forth. So I was part of the documentation team, and it's interesting because we started writing the documentations for migrating Vue 2 to 3 before Vue 3 was even a public thing. So we started things like way early, but things change, right? So after you write the first draft of the documentation, things change, things are added. For example, when we started the migration doc, there was no such thing as a script setup, which is new thing that the team added later, and so on and so forth. There are breaking changes, there are bug fixes that change a lot of things. So yeah, in a way, yeah, I would say I have this kind of privilege to understand what's happening and mm-hmm. and why it's happening, and yep. that's part of my talk. Okay, this is mm-hmm. it, how it was before. This is how it's today, but why did we make that decision?
Yes.
This is some kind of information that I have access to, but at the end of the day, the path to migrate for me is not much different from the next developer. I have to went, I have to go through the exact same step, by steps.
All right. So, yeah. But yeah, is it that common to write, you know, the migration script or the documentation beforehand, before even implementing the features? Mm-hmm. Is it that common to be done? Or you started already with these kind of changes for with an RFC or something, and people start commenting on it, and you changed your mind halfway?
Sorry.
Let me rephrase it. Uh-huh. So now, you said that you wrote already like a documentation for the Vue 3 mm-hmm. beforehand, before implementing the Vue 3 already.
Yes, yes.
Then this had been changed mm-hmm. halfway,
yes.
right?
Yes, yes.
So is that common to be done in open source project, to write the documentation ahead of time, ahead of the implementation?
I wouldn't say it was ahead of time. I would say it was ahead of the public timeline. Yeah. Let's say we haven't like released a public version of Vue yet, mm-hmm. and because it was still alpha and beta, but we started the documentations or the migrations, the changes, breaking changes way before that.
Yeah.
So, but from alpha or beta to public, you know that things still change.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, so that's the changes we're looking at. And in Vue's case, I would say some of the changes are good, but can be considered to be big. Like script setup is something, it's really a nice thing to have. Mm-hmm. But I think it was added after the alpha or the beta attack. So yeah, those are the things that
was a lot of work changing that.
Yeah,
yeah. More or less. Yeah, documentation is always painful, right?
Yeah, documentation is always pain in the ass. Yeah. To always keep up to date and that kind of stuff. But mm-hmm. yeah, I've heard you say script setup a couple of times. So is that like the main pool, you think, going from Vue 2 to Vue 3? Is that the main feature that you would say has the biggest advantages, or is there something else that you would?
Actually, no. Right, so from Vue 2 to Vue 3, I mean, there's several things. A core team, I'm sorry, no. Evan should be in the best position to answer this question. Mm-hmm. But I guess from Vue 2 to 3, the biggest features, so to say, would be first the improvement of the performance, because Vue 3 is just way faster and lighter. Mm-hmm. Second would be how the whole code base has been rewritten in TypeScript, and which means now all the typing are provided for free in Vue 2, which was not in Vue 2, right? Mm-hmm. In Vue 2, TypeScript is some afterthought thing. You have a library.
So there's a lot of gaps.
And it was not ever smooth. But with Vue 3, TypeScript was built into the core, so all the typings are given to you for free. Mm-hmm. The third one, which is something that people talk a lot about these days, would be the composition API, which mm-hmm. is something initially was inspired by React hooks, but the implementations and how it works, basically how it works underneath, is totally different.
Yeah.
And people talk about composition APIs and those. And during all those discussions, Evan come up with the script setup, which is a syntactic sugar. So you can totally live with Vue 3 without script setup. You don't need to use it. Mm-hmm. But the idea about it is to provide you with a syntactic sugar that removes a lot of boilerplate for you, mm-hmm. make things super easy to read, super easy to write, super succinct. The cost is reduced by like 50% in my case. So it's a good thing. So it's something that was built on top of something else. It's not required to be used, but it provides like tremendous improvement to developer experience.
It sounds like it keeps a bit out of the way of new workflows. So if you want to go to three, they could just do like a linear upgrade without using new features. But if you would start using new features, it would actually reduce your code base and make it a bit more efficient.
Exactly. So you, a lot of people would, a lot of developers would ask, okay, how exactly would I upgrade from 2 to 3? Mm-hmm. But actually, it's like this, because they think that everything needs to be changed, mm-hmm. but that's not the case. You can, because we, there are breaking changes, of course, because it's a major version, mm-hmm. but at the core, everything should still work more or less the same. So the even composition API, which is a great thing, mm-hmm. is purely additive. You don't need to use it. You may want to use it. Mm-hmm. It's recommended to use it, mm-hmm. but you don't have to.
Yeah.
Same with script setup, and same with a lot of other things in Vue 3.
Yeah, that's different, of course, than the hooks, because if you're using in React and you're creating a functional component, you have to use hooks.
Yep.
There is no other way, but given that you have the options API and the composition, you can opt in and out between them. It's fine, right?
Yep.
But what moved you from Vue 2 with option API to use composition API in Vue 3? What triggered you? All right, I would like to have composition API.
Okay, I think the most important, let's say, selling point for composition API is that with this API, code reusing and sharing is much more, let's say, much better, mm-hmm. and easier and very informative. It's one part. It's a slide or two slides in my talk, just for this. So before Vue 3, whenever we want to use to share the code between components, we more or less we have to use something called mixins, which is just something else you patch into the components. Mm-hmm. You have the same mixin, patch into different components, and each of the components will share these methods, these properties.
Yeah,
so which is good, but mixin is something that is so easy to use, but after like a while, when your components grow, it's very hard to reason about, because now you don't know where the features come from. If you import 2 or 3 mixins into your component and you use the features from those mixins, mm-hmm. now it's almost impossible for you to, okay, where does this, create user method come from? Because you'll see it in your component, it's hidden in mixin.
Yes.
Yeah, so you need to command shift F, mm-hmm. search for create user, it's in this mixin.
Yes.
And all the other problems that come with it. With composition API, we can achieve the same effect, mm-hmm. but without all this hassle, because now composition API allows you to write the same reusable code in a functional way. You just import it into into the components, and it's very clear where you import it from. And if you work with a smart enough IDE, you can just command click, follow the code, and it's very easy to reason about. Mm-hmm. You can use multiple, composables with the same methods, because you can import them under different names, and then you can test them in isolation.
That's very smart. Super. Yeah, convinced.
I'm triggered on functional though, because I come from a Java Kotlin background, and when people start talking functional, it's great, until they start talking purely functional, where you go to Scala, Haskell, those kind of things, and then a lot of people drop, because that's like the mathematical arena, right?
Yeah.
So would you say this functional approach is more like a purely functional thing, or just more like a functional style programming that's a bit more lenient?
I don't think that's a pure functional thing. Actually, in our documentations, there's a line that I think Evan added it there, saying, please notice that even though it takes the shape of functional, it's not purely a functional kind of development.
Yeah.
So it's not that same. Yeah. So if you keep asking me the question, what is really functional and what's not, I will shut myself up right here.
Yeah. That's really great. Yeah. So we can just summarize the importance of moving from Vue 2 to Vue 3, better DX.
Yes.
Yeah, that's the main thing about moving to Vue 3. If you would like to have a better developer experience, just move there. More readability and more concise code and less magic as well.
Yeah, so actually before going here, I posted a question in our channel. That's Bossbar. I posted a question in our Vue internal channel and said, hey guys, now that we know that things like Composition API, TypeScript and script setup, all of these features are being backported into 2.7 because they are. So what would convince the user to upgrade from 2.7 to 3, knowing that the shiny things will be available on 2.7 as well?
Yep.
So there are different answers to that, but I remember Carlos Picas, he says simply, okay, 3 is greater than 2.7, so
yeah,
simple. It's newer,
simple math, right? Yeah,
it's bigger than
bigger is better.
Works fine.
Yeah, and of course, makes a lot of sense.
Yeah,
but and then Evan answered as well, which I think is something he mentioned yesterday as well in his talk, saying that mostly it's about two things actually. One, the performance, because Vue 3 put a lot of different of efforts into the compiler layer.
Yep.
So things just freaking fast now, way faster than before even. And knowing that Vue 2.7 will be the last minor version that we release, we still have bug fixes, of course, but it will be the end of line for
backward compatibility.
Yes, so now, all future efforts will be spent on
three,
and all the ecosystem will just move ahead to that direction. Yeah. So if you can, of course, there are companies, there are code bases where strain upgrading from 2 to 3 is a bit more challenging.
Yeah.
But if you have the ability to, if you have the chance to, I would highly recommend upgrading.
Yeah, that's super.
It sounds good to me.
Very convinced about, moving to 3, to be honest. Yeah,
okay.
It sounds great. So, would you like to wrap up with our question?
Yeah, we can also wrap the interviews up with with the same question we ask on all the interviewees.
Right.
Which is, do you have a life hack or a developer trick that really changes the way you work or has a big impact in your life that you would like to share?
Cool. It's something that, I'm not really working as a developer. I'm a manager in my current company. But this is something that I've been telling my team members and myself as well to do. Always ask yourself this question before you make a decision. What's the worst that can be, right? Mm-hmm. And when you ask yourself the question, somehow all the decisions can be turn out to be quite simple. For example, if you want to release a feature and you feel it's still buggy, ask yourself the question, what's the worst that can be? If when you release it to production, that's a bug, what's the worst thing? Will that cost the client $1 million? If that's the case, maybe think about it a little bit.
Yes, think twice.
Maybe think twice. Yeah. But if the worst thing that can be is that, okay, in an edge case, 1 in 1,000 cases, the client will have the page not responsive and need to call us to fix. We can live with that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that question is very important.
Yeah.
And I think that developers like me, like my team, should ask ourselves that question way more often, because we tend to shy away from making those kind of decisions. Okay, there's a bug, let's not. Okay, it's not finished, it's not perfect. There will never be perfection.
Yeah.
And it's about a trade-off. Like, if it's buggy, how bad can it be?
Yeah, so you're giving a little bit of more autonomy to the team as well. Try new things, it's fine. If it's not bringing a lot of damage to our application, doesn't cost us a lot of money, it's fine, just go for it.
Yes, because code is not permanent.
Yeah.
We can always change. Yeah?
It will.
Yeah.
Yeah, that definitely will be changed or deleted.
Yes, yes. Or deleted. So rework.
Don't fall in love with your code, that's one thing.
Exactly. Nowadays, you can just revert it, right? Yeah. A burden, that's a burden away.
Yeah.
Like click, your code reverted. And if you have auto deploy or CI/CD and everything, then it's reverted and it released on production or on your station.
Yeah.
That's not too bad.
It's a great tip. Thank you very much for the tip. Yeah, it was a pleasure having you here. And I hope to
My pleasure.
Interview you a little bit more.
Yep. Yes, thank you very much. Thank you for
thank
your
you.
Time.
Thank and, you.
We'll see
thank
you on the next podcast.
See you.
All right.
Thanks for listening, and until the next one.